How are you, everybody? Welcome back to the channel. I'm Ron Swanson, and we're joined by Dara from the Clear Lens podcast, and we're going to be delving into Epstein and Trump, further connections and more associations. But Dara, thank you for joining us. Introduce yourself. It's great to have you here, and thank you for giving up your time, mate.
How's it going, Ron? Thank you for having me on. So my name is Dara. I'm a co-host of the Clear Lens podcast, where we've done a three-part series on the Epstein network and their links in Ireland specifically. And besides that, I do some journalist work, some teaching here and there as well, and try to sort of look at things through a general anti-imperialist lens.
Okay. Well, let's go back to when the files were released, right? What was your initial reaction to it all? Like, when it went from conspiracy to conspirafact, everything that we'd been told that we were crazy for thinking for so many years?
Yeah, I guess some validation originally. I had actually gotten in trouble even before when I was lecturing for even discussing the Epstein files. I'd gotten complaints about even trying to teach about this and connect it to global power structures and kind of trying to help students make sense of what's going on in the world through the sort of lens of the organized crime network that was being run through the Epstein network and more. So some validation. And then obviously there's a lot of just shock in terms of the sort of depravity, I guess, of these people. You know, you always hope that this sort of thing just doesn't happen in the world, I think, and just some anger as well. And I think probably the most disappointing thing really is the fact that now it is all out in the open, yet nothing has actually changed. You know, it does make you really question a lot else once that's the reality. So obviously a big mix of feelings. What about yourself?
Well, I mean, the pizza conspiracy, we covered that as it was happening. Everyone was told they were crazy. You know, we had video recordings of people walking past that pizza place, screams coming from inside it. We had a guy go in and shoot it all up, all the rest of it, but still we're the crazy ones, right? We had the email scandal. We had all of the stuff that went on with the Clintons, and yet we're still the crazy people, right? And I mean, we can go on and on and on about the Clintons, but when the files released, right, the thing for me was watching Kash Patel on the Joe Rogan podcast the same day that Elon Musk was posting about Trump and the files. It felt very bizarre that he was sat there in an Under Armour top telling us all that if there was any conspiracy, the FBI would have found it.
Yeah.
What? It's bananas. And, you know, we went from invading Greenland to UFOs and aliens to invading Iran. It was a slow build up to the traditional response of let's just invade a place and cause a distraction for me. But it was wild. And there is a big section, of course, within the files that are missing. But we'll get to that at some point, I would imagine, hopefully.
Yeah.
But take us where your journey began in your series and what really started that and brought you to your work, Dara.
Yeah. So our starting point, so I do the podcast with a woman named Audrey, and we started off by firstly going through Whitney Webb's research. So she has two books, One Nation Under Blackmail, Volume 1 and 2, where she kind of goes back to the origins of this network in New York, organized crime links with intelligence agencies, particularly of Italian mafia and Jewish organized crime, their links with the FBI and their operations during World War II, where they were collaborating on the New York ports, as well as their collaboration with Zionist paramilitary gangs in Palestine at the time as well. So we started off with this to try and give us a strong foundation and just understanding what this network are actually about, how did they begin and how it's evolved over time. Because, you know, there's a lot of media portrayals that try to isolate this network and this system down to the more sensationalist reporting on Epstein as a lone wolf rather than as a power structure. So that's where we started. And then in the second and third episode, we looked at the links in Ireland. That's where we're based, and that's where we have some agency to at least try to challenge these people, these systems, and to shed light on the criminal activities of them. And that led us to a few different places, the first of which was looking at the sort of human trafficking system that was being enabled by the Catholic Church in Ireland, and then also with the sectarianism and unionist paramilitary gangs in the north, as well then as finance, tax havens, and offshoring, really, that the group has evolved into doing more and more of over time.
Yeah, and how quickly did the link start coming together, Dara?
So once we understood how they operated and what they did, then things became a lot more obvious. So what we kind of came to the conclusion being is that, you know, firstly, this network. So when we look at how it's evolved over time and who was really there before Epstein. So two of the pivotal characters in this network is as far back as the 50s are J. Edgar Hoover, who was the founder of the main man of the FBI, and Roy Cohen, who was Epstein's predecessor and Trump's mentor. And they would have been essentially running these honeypot blackmail schemes, and this being connected to Zionism, to the sort of Red Scare under the McCarthyism and anti-communism, and then being linked also to the organized crime networks that already existed, that go back at least to the Prohibition era in the United States, is where a lot of these networks come from. But then tracing that through to what the system and this network got best at doing, which was really moving things, that being people, drugs, weapons, and money. And once we tried to sort of establish that framework, as well as kind of through the lens of class warfare is also one of this network's primary functions and how they serve this sort of transnational elite, trying to understand how over time they have sort of perfected the art of just extracting from the 99% of people on Earth, or 99.9%, and essentially consolidating power and wealth for themselves over time.
Now, when we speak about the transportation, whether it's people, money, substances, whatever, it's one of the biggest industries in the world. Okay, the human side of it all. And there's some cases in Ireland. I mean, there's cases. It's not just Ireland, obviously, but with the Concora House and things like this, there were some pretty like historically horrific cases. I mean, what was the linkage to any of that? Did you manage to come up?
So once we'd established the sort of human transportation aspect, the church scandals jumped out at us, and then also Kincora. So how we looked into the link between these two things, firstly with Kincora, there is testimony from many of the victims who have been there that have testified, firstly over Roy Cohen. So Epstein's predecessor, he was the head of, or on the board of, the Jewish Anti-Communist League. And he also represented McCarthy during the Red Scare. He came to Kincora in 1980 and he took a boy with him to Venice as a sex slave and returned him there. So that's one very clear link that we found with Kincora. And then the deeper you look into Kincora, this was essentially being run by MI5 with a unionist paramilitary group that worked under the ideology of something called British Israelism. and they believed that they were direct descendants of one of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. This same group actually tried to dig up the Hill of Tara in Ireland, which is one of our sacred sites, because they believed that there was an ancient relic taken from ancient Israel that was buried there. And then there was also a heavy involvement from the British royal family, particularly Lord Louis Mountbatten, who had a mansion in Sligo in Ireland and would have used Kinkora essentially as a feeder to traffic children out of. And these children were actually mostly Protestant boys. And it was mostly Protestant people, particularly from Unionist paramilitary groups, that MI5 would have been blackmailing through Kinkora so that they would have more control over these paramilitary groups in terms of their activities on the island of Ireland.
Yeah, it's such a horrific case, Kinkora. And for those of you who don't know that case, you'll be able to find plenty of information about it. There's a lot of people have covered it. Now, as far as Epstein's predecessor and Trump's mentor, what was that discovery like, and where did that initial connection lead you to?
Yeah, so that was primarily uncovered through Whitney Webb's research. So she really focuses on him for a large part of her book, One Nation Under Blackmail, as he was essentially the one to really turn this network into what it is today. And Epstein essentially just stepped into his role before that. So with Roy Cohen, as I mentioned, he kind of got a name for himself through representing McCarthy during the trials in the 50s. He was persecuting alleged Soviet spies who were sentenced to death. And then pivoted essentially to being a fixer in New York, who was working very closely with J. Edgar Hoover, was his partner in crime. So the FBI...
Is this the right guy?
That's Roy Cohen on the right there, yeah. Okay. So he was also a gay man, as was J. Edgar Hoover. So there was a lot of blackmail that was happening around sort of homosexual activity in this period as well. Roy Cohen actually ended up dying of AIDS in the 80s himself. He was disgraced after he tried to essentially rob somebody on their deathbed by changing their will. But he was Trump's mentor, really. So he brought Trump really into the network in the 70s. He would have arranged for Trump to essentially get deals from New York Mafia over cheap cement. He would have been Trump's lawyer as well, and would have represented Trump against tenants who would have sued him for breaking the law regarding tenants' rights, as well as discriminating against black communities that he wouldn't give properties to rent in the 70s. And he was the one who allegedly introduced Trump to Rupert Murdoch in the 70s as well, which was the start of a very powerful relationship from then onwards. So there's a few quite significant events that would have happened where you can see a lot of this network attending. A very prominent one is, maybe I'll say this wrong, but it's like B'nai Barat. It's essentially Israeli bonds for Zionists to make money through the sort of billionaire class in the United States. And there's one in 1983, which is essentially a like testimonial dinner for Roy Cohen, attended by the likes of Trump, Murdoch, Ronald Lauder, who was trying to lead the invasion of Greenland recently. He's also been the one to secure a huge amount of the rare earth minerals in Ukraine. And also many other prominent Jewish billionaires who are part of this mega group of Jewish philanthropists. So you see this network still, even 40, 50 years ago, very organized around specific causes. And when it came to then Epstein being brought into this, another one of the board members of this conference was a person, I think his name was Greenberg, who was the CEO of Bear Stearns, who ends up bringing Epstein into Bear Stearns, despite him having essentially zero credentials that would suggest he should be working there at that time.
Now, with when you're saying it's Epstein's predecessor, right, was there, what sort of criminality was, you said his name was Roy, yeah, Roy Cohen, what was the criminality level of his career like? Was it similar to Epstein, or was it circumstantial, or was it blatant?
Yeah, similar to Epstein, it started off on a much smaller scale, on a more local scale in New York, with the likes of J. Edgar Hoover, and he would have essentially had a suite in the Plaza Hotel, which Donald Trump went on to actually buy. And this would have been essentially a suite with like the one-sided mirror where they had essentially place bugged and could gain compromise on the important decision makers. But it was on a more local scale to start with. He would have built up then over decades a huge amount of compromise, also in association with J. Edgar Hoover, who was running the FBI. And they sort of had this kind of mutual blackmail scheme where they would blackmail you, but because they have compromise on you, they would then put you into positions of power because you're controlled. So with this, it was this sort of mutually beneficial scheme. And their kind of first big win was likely the Ronald Reagan presidency. So Cohen would have been on the phone every day, apparently, to the Ronald Reagan campaign to try his best to get them elected. He would have been engaged in a lot of bribery over splitting the sort of liberal vote in New York to get Reagan over the line in New York in particular. And when it comes to kind of Cohen relative to Epstein, it seemed it took on a more global dimension, perhaps, even though from the start it did have British, US and Israeli intelligence all from the get-go. However, from the 70s onwards, it expanded more into the likes of Saudi Arabia, the Gulf countries, Pakistan, through these sort of international banks, in particular the BCCI bank. And with Cohen, it, again, the network hadn't quite become seemingly as industrialized, as professional and as global as with Epstein. But types of crimes anyway were very similar, as well as the strategy of compromise.
For sure. The Cohen business model seems like the standard business model until the Epstein mothership arrived, because it seemed like a global diabolical enterprise, whereas this seems more like traditional evil as opposed to magnified evil. And, you know, blackmail seems to be something that, in the Diddy case, we've seen a bunch of people, a bunch of FBI leaving with black bags, not seen one piece of evidence, nothing going on there. Same with the Epstein case. Now, Epstein's been blackmailing since Betamax, bro, right? Since like the VHS days, he's been blackmailing. Yeah. And the sheer volume, right, of what he had, where is it all, you know? And when it comes to knowing, right, that these individuals trade in blackmail, and we've seen it being admitted to, why do you think we're seeing such little people, why are we seeing so few people being held responsible for their actions, do you feel?
Yeah, because, I mean, this whole network, it comes from the intelligence agencies. You know, it's a creation of the intelligence agencies collaborating with organized crime. So it's very unlikely that the investigators will be holding themselves to account, because they are the criminals at the end of the day. And the likes of Epstein, the likes of Cohen, the likes of J. Edgar Hoover, they're working directly with intelligence. Same in Kinkora, William McGrath. One of his victims was given a payment only last year in 2025 because of William McGrath's links to MI5. You know, right. So it's not like they're caught doing this by intelligence. They're told to do it by intelligence. So that's why there's so little accountability.
I'm with you. Do you not feel, though, that in the hierarchy of the Epstein files, there's some pounds of flesh that could have been offered to the people? The Woody Allens of the world, for example. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like they feel if they start tipping dominoes over, at some point someone's going to open their mouth, somebody's going to hand something over? Do you think that within the inner workings of the puppet masters, there was any point of concern that loose lips may sink ships, metaphorically speaking, from the lower echelons?
Yeah. Typically in these cases, I mean, it could be what happened to Robert Maxwell in 91, where he seemed to make a threat of some sort to release some information and was likely killed and thrown off his yacht as a result of doing so. Perhaps same with Epstein, that they felt he had too much information and too little use by the time he allegedly died. So I think with the release of the Epstein files and how they've done it, that's a big part, I think, of what they have done, probably without us really realizing, because they've only released still a relatively small portion of the totality of the files. They've redacted many of the most important pieces of information and names, and they've done so in a way that there hasn't actually been one arrest made over these. Some people have lost their jobs and have been, you know, somewhat disgraced. However, the real puppet masters, as what Whitney Webb would suggest, are the sort of old family dynasties. She mentioned specifically the likes of the Rothschilds and the Goldsmiths. And it's really them who seem to be pulling the strings behind the sort of more visible faces of the Epstein network themselves. But the global power structures have remained intact and seemingly as strong as ever in these cases. So I think they have done that quite cleverly in a way that makes it pretty difficult to really understand and hold people to account in the ways they should, even though there's more than enough information out there where, you know, all of these people should be in prison or worse. But I think they have done that already, just in ways that are difficult for us to understand.
Yeah, it seems bonkers. And there's a, you know, we've all seen the Jeff Mail site where all the Epstein emails are. They've updated it for Jeff Tube now, and when you go through all of the video footage that was released in the files, it's fairly clear that someone's went through it, put little boxes over people. Fantastic. Yeah. So how in the hell can we live in a world where the same can't be done, and we're seeing some level of exposing of these monsters? Because there is no other way to explain it other than you have, which is they're all in this together. It has to be. And when they're willing to give up baby jerky, right, and the island inside the files, you have to wonder if it is simply the head honchos and the money path that has been withheld from us. Because let's be honest, in the grand scheme of who controls the world, Hollywood stars and music stars, they are the bottom of the ladder to these people. Yeah. And even though it's simply because we see Hollywood as this untouchable place, it's being proven to be just that. And, you know, the Diddy case, the Epstein case, the Mark Dutroux case, it was absolutely fine for all of those men involved for them to be weirdos and perverts. But the minute there was a mention of a RICO or a larger, you know, group of them, it just gets laughed out of court. How can we turn the clocks on this? Do you think we're far past resolution in the world for taking down our vampiric overlords?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, when it comes to these people and just the brazenness of it all, because even with Epstein, I mean, he's been a known predator since at least 2008 when he was first convicted. All of these people knew about this and still went to his island and still engaged in these acts, you know? So, like, they weren't caught by surprise of any of this. And then when you look back through the history of a lot of this, you see actually this sort of thing has been going on for a lot longer than we realize. So in terms of trying to actually hold them to account, I mean, I think when we look around the world today, like not only in terms of the realization of who these sort of parasitic overlords are and what sort of activity they engage in, but in general, we see this shift even towards this big world war that they want us all getting signed up to go and kill each other for them. We see now the increasingly authoritarian shifts in terms of surveillance, digital IDs, currencies, and the plan to really replace all of us with AI and all of the rest. You know, there's like a lot of things all happening at once that make it quite difficult for people to really understand reality, and even more so to figure out how we can actually change reality. But what these people are most afraid of, and what they've always been most afraid of, is the people becoming educated as to what their reality actually is and how it's shaped. And more than anything is them getting organized and fighting together against these tiny of people. So this network, even in the 40s, with collaboration from FBI, from organized crime, from British, US and Israeli intelligence, were going breaking up worker strikes in the docks throughout this time. The whole kind of Red Scare, whatever about capitalism, communism, whatever they want to label it as, what they're really afraid of is any group of people getting organized enough where they have the power to actually fight back and hold these people to account. So trying to just cut through the noise of all of it and just understand really what this is a fight of the parasites really against the host, against the 99.9% of people on this earth who are being exploited and are being extracted from, is to really try and do our best to just unite and understand we have one enemy, and it's this group of people, and that whatever they try to do in terms of divide and conquer, you know, like they've done in Ireland with like Catholics and Protestants very effectively in the north. But when you see actually Kinkora as an example, it's the Protestant boys who are being abused by British intelligence and the British royal family, you know, and it's this small group of people who really everybody should be trying to organize and fight against. And that needs to be done through being able to exercise our own power, whether that's in terms of protest on the streets, whether that's in terms of trying to organize and exercise power in the workplace, whether it's conversations like this where we can actually speak openly and honestly and hope people can understand their reality and to engage in it in a way that is about benefiting the 99% instead of just serving the vampires.
Right. And It's sad, though, because every opportunity they're given to make us proud, they completely screw it up. And, you know, we just have to keep reminding ourselves that there was no Epstein files until Trump was legally required to deliver them all. I mean, we've seen the charade with those influencers that were holding up the white folders and things like this. It's bananas. It was the whole thing is bananas. And I think this global agenda, you mentioned the war they're trying to suck us all into. I've got a horrible feeling, right? There's legislation in America where if it's too mental, the president doesn't have to step down. And I just feel that we're entering into a realm where a catastrophic event is going to take place. And I know war is not the catastrophic event I'm talking about. It's going to be something else. And more countries are going to get involved, and Trump's going to... I feel like we're headed towards... the minute Trump gets out of power, then I think there's going to be too much of a second cabinet trying to release files. are being pressured to release files, especially when this entire cabinet's entire ethos was releasing the files for their campaign. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's a possibility that we're going to see a longer presidency with Trump through some form of shenanigan?
Yeah, I think it's certainly possible. And I think war is a good excuse to avoid elections. Like we see now, even in Ukraine, this exact sort of strategy being implemented there, where if there's war, you don't want an election. Now, whether they'll continue with Trump or not, I'm not sure. If it's worth it for them, depending on who they think they can get in instead. Obviously, J.D. Vance has been put there by Peter Thiel and Palantir, who are also very deeply connected in this network. Thiel and Epstein were very close associates and co-investors, and Palantir now, many would claim that they have sort of taken Epstein's role in this network, and the need for somebody like Epstein or Cohen, due to Palantir's abilities to surveil and due to their deep infiltration of governments, healthcare systems, and militaries around the world, that it's not as necessary to have somebody like Epstein anymore. But if they can get J.D. Vance into the presidency, I think that's as good as having Trump for them. So I think they're going to see how likely that is that they can get him in there. And based on that, see about trying to keep Trump on through a wartime agreement or just replace him with Vance. And him being replaced with Vance is already the vice president. So if anything was to happen to Trump, it's already Vance that would step into the
role. That's true. It would seem quite odd, though, to not have a geriatric individual running the country for once, I think, in America.
Yeah.
That would be the most shocking thing, is he can make up a flight of stairs by himself. do you know what I'm saying? Now, listen, just to sort of pivot a second, did you look into the girlfriend, daughter, fiance that was left like 500 million of Epstein's? She was left the ranch, she was left everything. Did you look into her at all? I can't remember. I swear to God, every time I talk about this woman, my brain deletes her name. Okay, someone in the side chat will let me know what her name is. But she, I feel like she has just walked it away into the shadows. 500 million, all the secrets, all of the properties. I mean, Ghislaine Maxwell got left 10 million, which was the same as Epstein's pilot. So it was a bit of a slap in the face. Did you find out? What's your take? Let me try and find her name for you. That would probably help.
The headline of that, but I didn't actually. I haven't looked into that just yet. Yeah. But in terms of the ranch itself, having never really been investigated properly, this ranch was also this address won the U.S. lottery, 85 million alone, and this also seems to be where a lot of the people would have been transported across the border to New Mexico. And with the people who have been to this ranch, it seems like there was a huge amount of geneticists and scientists that were being brought down here, essentially to escape any sort of ethics or regulatory oversight with regards to stem cell research, transplants. And I have even seen it alleged in several different places that what the ranch was being used for. So there's this sort of transhumanist ideology that Peter Thiel would be very deeply invested in, trying to merge humans with AI. And then also these billionaires trying to essentially escape death and live forever. And one of the things that they try to do is essentially try to implant stem cells into their own bodies to allow their organs to regenerate. And it's been alleged that that's what one of the main functions of Zorro Ranch was to essentially impregnate women, typically younger women, who would then have 50% of the father's genetics, which would then have a much higher chance of being accepted when it was then
involved. Wow. Okay.
And that's just one of the allegations as to what this ranch was used for. There was also allegations that Netanyahu had visited this ranch before in the past as well. And it was never searched, never investigated, and essentially allowed to be cleared out. And the likes of this woman escape with a huge amount of the evidence as well as the research. And that's another very important thing, is the research that they're doing and for what functions all of this biohacking, genetic engineering, and this sort of move to try and create these sort of like superhumans that apparently isn't as far away as mainstream science believes.
I mean, I'm a massive nerd, okay, and I get really frustrated when it's the evil vampiric overlords that ruin all the cool stuff, right? Because I wouldn't want like a generation one bio arm, but like maybe like a gen 10 bio arm. That would be sick. Never have to worry about where a lighter is ever again. Ever again. Who doesn't want to do that to make a call?
Yeah.
Like 6 months down the line, they're going to like start playing ads through it if like I can't pay my subscription on it. And it's this whole, we don't own anything. And it's sad because a lot of these things that are monstrous overlords are trying to force us into are through control. It's through so that they can have their tight little grasp around us. And it's very disappointing because some of them are actually sick ideas. It's just can't trust them. And this is another thing, like Elon Musk with the putting the microchip in people's heads. I think he's at a stage now where it's now a gum shield that people are putting in. So they don't even have to have the chip implanted in their head now, because again, you know, they're going to start playing adverts through that as well. But all of these things, it's very disappointing who it is that's running these tech corporations. But they do love a slow grooming process, Dara, right? Because if they had told you everything that was going to be in the iPhone 17 when the iPhone 1 came out, nobody would have bought the iPhone 1, bro. Do you see what I mean? It's taken like 2 decades of slowly grooming us to use our fingerprint and our face and our bank details and everything in this one little device. Yeah. So it's kind of the same with these individuals, where I feel like they're just going to wait long enough to re-conspirify the Epstein files. So 5-10 years from now, people are going to be going, well, if that was true, someone would have been arrested, you know? Do you feel like that's a tactic they're gonna try and use? Do you feel like some carpet sweeping is gonna try and take place in the future?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, even in terms of all of this cyber surveillance in the European Union now that they're trying to push through, I've been increasingly jealous of Brexit as time goes on. From this lens anyway, because now they've put through these chat controls now where basically the European Union has granted tech companies the power essentially to read all of our text messages, to scan through all of our photos under the guise of child pornography. Again, despite all of
the Internet Safety Act or whatever it's called, or something similar, right?
And there's going to likely be chat control 2.0, which will allow to try and break the encryption. There's the militarization projects happening within the European Union, and there's the migration pacts being pushed through, and huge amounts of seismic changes happening that are just too overwhelming for people to understand. And when it comes then also to digital currencies and these now being linked to digital IDs, one of the ideas from Sam Altman, the OpenAI CEO of ChatGPT, he has a digital currency that he has suggested, and it's going to be based on retina scanning, you know, where increasingly they're trying to push through these things under the guise of efficiency, of safety, and of this technological advanced society that they're building. And really what it's all going to be designed for is that we won't be able to consume anything, to buy anything, to go anywhere without their permission, and to give them the ability to cut off the likes of me and you for trying to hold them to account over any of this. So it is just this process that they try and kind of push things through under a very different lens. The same thing even for social media. You know, again, this is Peter Thiel from the very start being involved in the likes of Facebook, even the likes of Palantir actually being created out of a CIA project, Total Information Awareness Act, and then tricking the population that it has one function when in reality two, the people running these project. It has a completely different function, and that is always to extract and control, and to do so in ever increasing measures.
Yeah, it's quite well. I mean, we're seeing in more recent days as well with the flock cameras rolling out, and just how much they can be abused if you have access to them. It's bananas. And I mean, AI should be serving humanity. It shouldn't be something that humanity is growing to fear, because our evil overlords can't be bothered making good decisions. And for the good of mankind, we need to take human error out of running planet Earth, right, Dara? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's absolute madness. I mean, in saying that, on one hand, I say that. On the other hand, I feel like about 60% of all government work could be done by the populace voting on Twitter for how a budget gets spent. Do you know what I mean? It's really only the really complicated stuff that we need some people making some educated decisions on. But I can decide how much local money should be spent on schools and garbage, and like how many potholes should be filled in. Like, why are we not just pushing a button on a Monday morning and outroll the changes? You know, I think one of the arguments, right, was, well, if we arrest everybody in the Epstein files, everything will collapse. No. Do you know how long it would take? It would take 36 hours for everything to go back to normal.
Okay? Yeah.
It would take 36 hours for everything to go back to normal. Do you know what I think the bigger fear is, Dara? I think for the first time, we are living in a world where we actually no longer need Hollywood or the music industry at all, right? I mean, other than like some major movie that comes out, right? How much actual like mainstream content do people consume these days? Do you see what I mean? Yeah. And we're getting in. No, Ron did not cut his hair off. Do not worry. It is just slicked back in a council bun. So have no fear. Like, we're seeing these incredible AI stories come. I mean, we are really in the era of the weird guy, the autistic guy in his mum's basement in his mid-40s because he's not left the house because he's socially, like, backwards, but has a fantasy world in his head that he can play out now. I think they would just realize we don't need them because, in actual fact, you can pay a couple of grand a year for some AI licensing for video generation stuff, and it's pretty impressive. Like, it's pretty impressive. And even going back to the more traditional side, there's a show that's just come out in the UK on YouTube called Roadman, which is like a mockumentary all about a guy who wants to be one of these London roadmen. And it's like a tongue-in-cheek sort of gangster series. Hilarious. It's all top-notch content. Do you feel that possibly that could have been where their fear lies, is if everything was to get shut down, is the illusion then gone that we actually need any of this crap?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. You actually just reminded me of, there's a kind of famous case of this in Ireland where the bankers went on strike and nobody cared.
Nothing happened.
It worked fine, you know? And like, you know, there was, when Thatcher was in government, she drew up sort of a plan of who we actually need. How long could the country keep going if the bin men went on strike? Now, that wouldn't last long because everything goes to shit. If the bin men go on strike, or if the people actually doing the work in society were to go on strike, things go to shit very quickly. But if you remove the parasites, in fact, the body starts to work a huge amount better because you don't have these people essentially sucking the lifeblood out of people, exactly, our planet. And I think that's a huge concern for them. Now, when these people are sort of thinking about this, I would say, I mean, their main concern is just that, you know, they see themselves seemingly on this sort of godlike quest, many of them. Now, how actually religious any of them are, I have my doubts, but they do have an ideology and they do believe that they are the ones that are going to successfully fuse with AI, that they are successfully going to crack the code of human genetics and be able to hack themselves and to potentially live forever and be able to regenerate. I think that's kind of their true driving force, is to break through these sort of Frontiers.
I agree. I just want to remind all the elites that one of the guys on your team couldn't launch the Xbox 360. Okay, couldn't launch it, mate. Right? They weren't built properly. And this is who you're putting your faith in. Now, do you know what's really interesting? Right? If we look at MK Ultra, right, and all of the history and mind control and all of this, and how, and specifically how it was portrayed in things like Clockwork Orange and whatnot. And then we fast forward to Disclosure Day, Spielberg's latest movie. I think the living forever factor has got something to do with, it's less about integrating with AI and it's more about removing your conscious into AI and then moving it back into another body. Because I think this, we've spoken to so many survivors of MK Ultra from the golden era of craziness right the way through to the modern era of survivors, and it's always circulating around this shifting, this downloading, and this long distance controlling of people's minds. And you would think, right, in the most sort of logical way, right, that would be a convincing science, I think, to exist for someone to have that immortality, is being able to drag and drop your mind like a file from one folder to another on a desktop. I think that in my head, right? Because otherwise people are going to start getting sus if we've still got, like, could you imagine though, you're 85 years old and you're a billionaire and they can only stop you aging. And you're just stuck as a wrinkly old man for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? Gutted for you, mate. But I mean, what do you think about the possibility of the carbon? They did a series about it. It's like the carbon body or something like this, where the mind is the part that can live on in a new body. Do you think that could be part of Epstein's obsession with all these weird sciences?
Yeah, I personally wouldn't believe in that, but I believe it's what they believe, you know?
Right, okay, I'm with you.
As you said, like, even these people, you know, they've even been called, like, the Nerd Reich, right? Where they sort of are obsessed with computers and AI, and most of them are coders, and they understand reality really through this lens that the Earth and humanity are essentially just machines that are programmable and coded essentially in the same way as computers might be. And through that lens, like, this should be possible, this idea to be able to in some way record and store a mind. For me, I would believe that a mind couldn't be captured, and there is just a certain mystery that will always remain about the human mind. And when it comes to the human body, I guess I understand the science of that more in terms of being able to regenerate cells and tissue technology. But again, I'm not an expert in either of these things. These are kind of just more so based
That's interesting. So you feel like the money would be better spent if you were an evil billionaire overlord vampiric monster, of course. You would feel going down the regen side of science. See, that's interesting. Because to me, anyway, we're not going to dwell on this, but it's interesting because how you feel about what I'm thinking is how I feel about what you're thinking. Mm. And it's just great because we'll never know. But the weird sciences were wild, okay? And we've heard about the word that we can't say, the thing that's made from children that the celebrities drink and all of this kind of stuff, right? And here's an interesting fact, right? Like, we can go on the internet and buy that right now, right? It's $14 a gram for the shmashmira shmom off the internet, right? And what is that? Why can I buy that? And, like, what's it for? Like, I mean, it's insane. And what do you think the reality is behind the occultist side of Epstein and these elites when it comes to the horrors that we've heard about the sciences involving children? Do you think the reality of it is as bad as we think?
Yeah, I would say probably even the reality, it could be worse based on kind of even these videos you showed there with these black squares or even what they've not included or redacted or anything, like, because they've really only left very small hints of like the true nature of some of the things that they were doing. You know, you even mentioned someone like the Clinton, like the Pizzagate and the other one, I can't remember the name of it. Yeah, and then stuff even related with George Bush Sr. and like even the eating and the coercion that goes on in that, even because some of it seems to be a case of just what is the most like repulsive, horrific, disgusting thing we could possibly imagine somebody doing. Let's make them do it because then we have complete control over them.
Right.
So I imagine it's probably even worse, as shocking as that is. But I mean, can it get that much worse than like raping and eating? Like,
right. Exactly.
I don't know. I don't even want to think of what that could be like. But then when you kind of just connect it to this like deeper ideology, and even, you know, through history, there have been these sort of rituals, there have been these ideologies which do sort of encourage these sort of sacrifices and other things. So there is precedent for it. And there is very obvious reasons to do it now, in that they have been able to pretty successfully control the governments now of the biggest, most powerful countries on Earth. So, like, to me, there's not any real limits to the depths that they would go to to achieve their goals, which have been like largely achieved, even if they haven't achieved their final objectives.
Yeah, another thing, right? I mean, other than being a highly motivated individual, which you cannot take away from Epstein, because I swear the guy had 10 body doubles. Like, if I was Epstein, I would just send my body doubles out to do all of the boardroom meeting stuff where, like, there's a good 8 feet between you and the other person. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, like, I often wonder what his aspirations in life were, because it wasn't own an island and eat baby jerky. That was his day job. That was his day job, right? And he had this obsession with the royals. He had this obsession with what I believe, Dara, right, was the only thing he could never have, which was becoming a bloodline, which is like being a Rothschild, being one of them. Doesn't matter how rich you are, how powerful you are, how much blackmail material you've got, you will never be like us. Yeah. And then there was the whole conspiracy about Epstein being added into a certain vaccination, right, and all of this. And his obsession with the royal family, his obsession with his DNA being spread around, do you think that he was in some way trying to up the regalness of his future offspring stature in some way? Because I'm not saying that he's got any royal kids, but he's got a lot of connections to a lot of princes and princesses, and it was just a very bizarre amount, you know? So do you think that he possibly has an obsession with trying to elevate his stature through his future offspring or himself?
Yeah, on the future offspring, I'm not sure, because he doesn't have like known children. And in terms of his lineage, I have heard actually some pretty convincing arguments that he is connected to quite powerful family, the Epsteins in Germany. I don't know if you follow this Irish woman, Ali MC Forever. She does a lot of good investigative journalism and a lot of research on Epstein. And she's found Epstein ancestry that is very strikingly similar to Jeffrey Epstein. But he certainly was driven by this sort of socialite lifestyle with Ghislaine Maxwell, obviously, of course, as well. And he did seem to be extremely excited by the prospect of getting to know British royal family and other royal family around the world. And given his links with these family dynasties, I think this was a key motivational factor for him. And when he is alleged to have been brought into this network. There's a couple of different theories, but I've heard one that it was through the Goldsmith family in England while he was backpacking through Europe and he was introduced. Others allege that it's actually through Saudis, like the likes of Khashoggi, who was weapons smuggler and involved with the BCCI bank, and other theories. Now, I don't know exactly as to how that would have began. But I think when I've also looked at some of his other emails, he does seem to love the sort of party aspect and just the prospect of partying, socializing with all of these sort of wealthy, powerful celebrities and being important to them and being able to have this sort of heightened sense of self-importance. Because
you know, I think we could argue that was again, and again, you're not wrong. It's just, I feel that falls into the day job category. Right. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's going to be an aspect of his indulgence that's alone. But I think the island and all of that service, I think primarily is the business side of stuff. And this was weeks of like racking my brain is like, what would he be obsessing about? Like, what would he lie awake and obsess about not having or trying to obtain? Because, yeah. I mean, He's as far as evil overlord of the world goes, he's nailed it. You know, he's got the island, he's got the planes, he's got the royals, he's got all of the politicians in his pocket. He gets done for selling an underage girl and interacting with an underage girl, and gets given a 6-month sentence and an $89 million lottery win. And it was the DOJ that called the judge during the case and said, hey, listen, you've got to give him a lenient sentence. And the only person that can do that is the president. And it makes you wonder just when the blackmail sand starts trickling down, just how effective it is at having its way. It really does.
Yeah.
Because
for him, like he wasn't puppet master. So that's why I was kind of thinking in terms of his motivations relative to the people he's serving. But I mean, who gave him his mansion in Manhattan and essentially put up the money for the island potentially is Les Wexner, who again is one of these Jewish billionaire philanthropists and involved in this mega group. He was the owner of Victoria's Secret at the same time. And with this, he really is kind of serving the interests of this group. CIA whistleblower in 1990 called them the Enterprise. There's a great kind of quote by him where he's kind of talking about the success of this Enterprise group as far back as 1990. So in terms of kind of their interests, really the way I came to understand it is essentially this class war, not in terms of how it's typically understood, but really of this hyper core that's also arranged in terms of these sort of ethnic supremacist ideologies that they have as well. So throughout these files, of course, they do also kind of have these rankings in terms of the ethnic groups where they have like this kind of Ashkenazi Jewish Eastern European kind of at the top of this hierarchy. So Roy Cohen would come from that lineage as well. Mm-hmm. They talk about the WASPs, so the Western Anglo-Saxon Protestants, kind of being closely behind that. And then kind of at the bottom, essentially sort of having Arabs and Africans. So they do strongly support the Greater Israel Project. They have been very active in the Zionist Project at the same time, which I do think is also linked to their sort of end game in terms of that expansionist project, as well as just trying to take over and control as much of the planet as they can through different means. And of course, there's competing interests within this network at the same time. But ultimately, it's world domination really is like the plan of Epstein's masters anyway. And then they need to convince him through different incentives to be so effective as he obviously was.
Yeah, it's a crazy one, and a little bit of me just feels like this is just going to fade away into obscurity as time goes on. Mm. We'll never really know the true extent of any of it. It's the same with all of these monsters: Diddy, Mark Dufresne, Epstein. The list. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, I think it's fair to say that we both kind of know who's Israeli in charge, right?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Because I was saying this earlier, right? How is a little country with a massive wall around it just got so much swinging power? I don't get it. Like, also, one way in and out seems very dangerous to me. Okay. That's all I'm saying, Israel. Like, if I lived at the back of Israel, I'd be having anxiety constantly. But I mean, how much do you think we can put on the possibility of a main puppet master coming out of that realm of the world?
How do you mean exactly?
Well, you know, and I listen, this is all allegedly, right? But yeah, you hear a lot of stories heading back to that part of the world. Okay, yeah. Whether it's Charlie Kirk, whether it's everything that's going on right now with Iran and other places that are just getting shelled to pieces.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is some precedence in the world being secretly controlled by part of that part of the world?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be so secret nowadays. I mean, they've basically just dismantled international law. Not that it ever really existed equally or fairly in any way, but essentially they've kind of just gotten rid of it. And every sort of precedent and every bit of soft power, even that the West has built up over decades, they've just cashed it all in for the sake of Israel, you know? And when it comes again to this network in particular, they were deeply involved in the creation of the State of Israel. The Rothschilds, who were likely behind this network, the Balfour Declaration was written in 1917 to Lord Rothschild, you know? And when we even look back sort of at the development of the State of Israel over time and the connection to this network, one of the examples that Whitney Webb gives is a man called Richard Pearl, who is quite well known in this network and was caught leaking U.S. intelligence to Israel in the 70s. He then goes on to essentially be a key part of the every U.S. administration from Reagan all the way up through to George Bush Jr. and is one of the architects of the Iraq War. But significantly, he wrote Operation Clean Break for Benjamin Netanyahu's first term in 1996. And this Operation Clean Break says we're going to break with the Oslo Accords and we're going to go on the front foot with U.S. military. It's this neoconservative movement, and basically use the U.S. military to topple every government that isn't friendly to Israeli interests. And the last country on the list of countries that they wanted to topple is Iran. So we're still seeing 30 years later this plan that's already in effect, written by an Israeli asset controlled by this network in the 70s. This same person, Richard Pearl, is one of the architects of the Total Information Awareness Act, which Palantir comes out of as far back as 2003. So really, it's their world in many ways that we're living in. So I don't even think it's like a secret or a conspiracy anymore. It's very much out in the open for everybody to see today. And the real question is like, where does the true power lie? Is it in the United States? Is it still in England? Is it in Israel? Is it in the family dynasties? Probably a combination. And, you know, that's why sometimes like the nation state can sometimes get in our way in the analysis, when really it is this sort of transnational elite who are collaborating very closely based on shared interests, based on ideology, based on religion, based on ethnic supremacy, whatever it is. But they are proving really how much power they do have. I mean, they're controlling the U.S. military today. They're controlling the U.S. government. And once you have that control, you control a huge amount.
Yeah. I mean, you can have all the plans in the world, right? But you can't guarantee when a plan rolls out, everyone's going to fall into place 30, 40 years after it's signed, right? Yeah. So I honestly, I think everything you've said there is bang on. And I think once you add a nice little frosted layer of blackmail material that's been gathered up, you're done. You're absolutely cooked, mate. You're cooked.
Yeah.
And I say this to some people. They're like, well, not everyone can be a PDFL. No, you're right. Some people secretly recording them going to the bathroom is mortifying enough that they will be controllable. Do you see what I'm saying? And also, you got to remember as well, people, the days of follow the money are over. Look at how many people have children, okay? If you've got children, you are controllable within one phone call and a photograph being sent to you. So sometimes it's not about money trails. It's about how many people are in this operation that are like you and me and that are normal, that would never take a backhander, but would not like to see their children be Epstein. Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's something we need to keep in the back of our minds. But listen, Dara, did you say earlier that you were a tutor or a teacher or something?
Yeah.
What would be your, is it grown-ups or is it little kiddies that you're?
Grown-ups, yeah.
Grown-ups, right. So what would be your message, right, to the demographic of the people that you teach to about the worries of all of this, the world, and how they can really get their head around believing in any of the infrastructure that's meant to be there to serve them?
Yeah, I would say like the first thing we just have to start doing again is like doing our best to organize ourselves, whether that's in our neighborhoods with our neighbors, whether that's in our workplaces, because I think what's become clear is that no matter what country, the politicians are not accountable to us. The politicians are serving this group of people and their interests, the billionaire class, essentially. So what we need to do is basically to try to exercise our own sovereignty. And that is, to me, kind of starting with control over food in particular, I think is going to be a huge issue in the years to come, especially as we have an increase in extreme weather events. And to also try to build up our sort of local economies and to be less dependent on these people so that we actually have access to the things we need on a day-to-day basis. And that will likely mean, I think, having these sort of alternative economies that are working outside of the digital system completely, to try to break our dependence collectively on technology that is increasingly being used to control us and to surveil us. And over time, this is also going to need to become, I would say, more militant in terms of being able to defend ourselves, protect ourselves, and to really start holding the people that are elected to serve us to account. Because at the minute, everybody's woken up to this reality of who these power structures really serve. And to also not fall for the scapegoating and the divisions that they're trying to create amongst us, and to really ensure that everything we're doing is in solidarity with each other and with the oppressed people around the world. Because I think what's increasingly clear is we do have one enemy. It is these parasites. It's not the migrants. It's not the people with a different religion to us. And it's we're collective victims of this criminal institution rather than anything else. So I think that's be increasingly important, is how we actually unite and fight this system together, really.
I agree with you 60% of the way. Sadly, there is one ideology in this world, and it is misrepresented as a religion, that seems to be sweeping through the Western world, that has only one thing in mind, and that is the absolute eradication of our culture, our people, our faiths, and our way of life. And sadly, whether or not we choose to believe it's a political game or not, the young women and children who are being arred on our streets, the people who are walking their dogs and being stabbed up, we can argue that this is all by design to divide us, and I can agree with you. As I watch them all packing by their bags and heading back across the channel to France, in which they came. And other than that, Dara, like, we're right there, bro. We're right there. And it's been great chatting with you, mate. And like your the insight that you brought with regards to Cohen, I think his name was, and the predecessor, and all of that has been fantastic. And your research is outstanding. Where can people find more of you? Like, let us know where people can find more of you. And what have you got coming up next?
Yeah, so on YouTube, it's the Clear Lens podcast. So there we did a three-part series, a deep dive that really contextualizes a lot of the history and the evolution of this network, as well as then concrete links in Ireland that go through British intelligence, British royal family, that go through the Catholic Church, that also go through the refugee centers in Ireland with direct links to the likes of Morgan McSweeney in England and his family. Mm-hmm. Then there's on Instagram, and my name on Instagram is Sergeant Sauce, SGT_Sauce. And I do another podcast called Radio Shamrog Jarig on YouTube as well. So that's where I'd be posting most of my...
That's a random mix of branded names, bro.
Yeah.
Went from Sergeant Sauce to the most like Irish sounding thing ever heard, right? Too good, bro.
Different audiences.
Hell yeah, you do. Hey, listen, we're all like onions and we have layers, okay? Okay. Some when I play games on the internet, I'm Toasty the Mallow. Okay. Weird world. Okay. But I'll tell you what, Dara, I've got some panel shows planned in the future with Epstein involved, and I'd love to have you back for some of them, because it's just been great talking to you. And thank you so much for your time, brother. It really has been a pleasure this evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on, Ron. Great to chat to you as well. So hopefully chat to you again in the future.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And listen, everyone, thank you for watching. Thank you to the mods. I'll be live again in 20 minutes. Don't go anywhere. Just stay right here. Talking about the dark, satanic, hidden origins of the occult and what history doesn't teach us. By golly, do we cover it all here. And Dara, thank you so much. Thank you again to the Sean Atwood channel. Thank you to the mods. Thank you to you at home. We'll see you in the next one. From me, Ron Swanson. As always, be safe out there. Peace.